makers of jewellery like no other you will ever wear. Listen in if you can.
But right now, it's 1001 Songs. With me, your host, Seth Tetley-Jones. 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Creswell. Toby Creswell wrote his first article in 1972. Since then, he has written extensively on music and popular culture, and his work has appeared on numerous Australian and overseas publications. Overseas, like here in New Zealand, presumably. In 1985, he was appointed editor of the Rolling Stone, Australia, forming a partnership in 1987, which continued to publish the magazine until 1992. After Rolling Stone, he co-founded the publisher Terraplane, which launched Juice magazine, as well as a variety of other titles, including Monument, Australian Style, and HQ. Now, that's Toby Creswell, and he has written this book, you know, to give a general overview of the best songs he's come across and the songs that he thinks are the most influential in his career as a music journalist. The one we're going to start off with this week is The Imposter, Elvis Costello as The Imposter, and Pills and Soap from 1983. Elvis Costello is generally in danger of entangling his work in his own puns and the sheer weight of his record collection. One album followed the next, and with stylistic twists, but by the mid-80s, the world Falklands War, a military adventure, the sole purpose of which was increasing support for Margaret Thatcher. Costello penned Shipbuilding, about the effect of war on the average English person and how the dockyards had become would come back to life on the blood of soldiers and sailors in the southern Atlantics. Sung by Robert Watts, it was a deeply affecting song. The following year, he followed it up with Pills and Soap. Lyrically, such a time as that people might sympathize with it, that's all. Costello's Eve's funeral organ and piano against the lament of Elvis Costello's voice. Elvis Costello as The Imposter with Pills and Soap.
They talk to the sister, the father, with a microphone in one hand and a checkbook in the other, and the tears on her face, you can put them back together with your paper and paste, but you can't put them back together, you can't put them back together. What would you say, what would you do? Children and animals, two by two. Give me the needle, give me the rope. We're going to melt them down for pills and soap. Give me the needle, give me the rope. We're going to melt them down for pills and soap. Crowbars, gently your desire, out of the frying pan, into the fire. The king is in the counting house, some folk have all the luck, and all we get are pictures of Lord and Lady Muck. They come from lovely people with a hard line and hypocrisy. There are ashtrays of emotion for the flagons of the aristocracy. What would you say, what would you do? Children and animals, two by two. Give me the needle, give me the rope. We're going to melt them down for pills and soap. Give me the needle, give me the rope. Thank you.
The sugar-coated pill is getting bitterer still. You think your country needs you, but you know it never will. So pack up your troubles in a stolen handbag. No dilly-dally, boys, rally round the flag. Give us our daily bread in individual slices and something in the daily rack to cancel any crisis. What would you say? What would you do? Children and animals to buy to. Give me the needle, give me the rope. We're going to melt them down for pills and soap.
Costello as the imposter and pills and soap. Not, in my personal opinion, Elvis Costello's best work, but I can see that Toby Creswell, as a journalist, did have an appreciation for it because it is transparently a protest song. Mr. Creswell, of course, Toby Creswell, the author of this here, 1001 Songs, the Great Songs of All Time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. I mean, a few weeks ago, some time ago, I used to have to, you know, turn over the book and look at the cover where it has this little catchphrase here before I would say it. And now it just sort of rolls off like I've said it a million times before. And, oh, right, I have said it a million times before. But never mind, I'll say it again after I play this next song, which is Doc Watson and the Deep River Blues, which, of course, is adapted from a traditional song. He recorded this in 1964, but he was born in 1923, and he was already middle-aged when he made his first major concert and subsequent recording date. Doc Watson was born in Deep Gap, North Carolina. Blinded by childhood illness, he took to music, learning hillbilly, bluegrass, western tunes, and the pop music of the 1940s. He played banjo and guitar around the Carolinas in a variety of bands while devising a unique flat-picking guitar style. By the time he made his New York debut with the Clarence Ashley Spring Band, he was an undisputed master. Watson was one of the unqualified discoveries of the 60s folk boom. He sang with a mellifluous, sometimes broken and forlorn voice, but his guitar playing absolutely shone. Watson's fingers moved around a melody with the sureness and logic that was simply breathtaking. In part, Watson's style comes from his diverse range of influences, such as the gypsy jazz player Django Reinhardt, the dark minimalism of Ferry Lewis, and the fact that he tried to adapt fiddle playing to the flat-picked guitar. More than technique, though, Watson's first album, the playing has a warm, deep tone that flows like a rich rush over black water as Watson picks his way through the tune and sings the mantra-like blues. He comes as close as possible to rendering the divine.
For instance, a blues that might have been kind of popular in the days of the...
This is Doc Watson talking.
The steamboat, or just a smaller boat that some fella had, and he kind of got the blues. The rain calls a good old pal. She walks just like a waterfowl. If I get them deep river blue, there ain't no one to cry for me, and the fish all go out on a spree when I get them deep river blue.
Oh, I'm very sorry about this. I'm not sure quite entirely what that was, but having said that, that was a great track there from Doc Watson, Deep River Blues. Now, we've got John Coltrane and My Favourite Things from 1960. The Sound of Music opened on Broadway in 1959. By 1965, it would be the biggest movie of its era, and songs like Do Re Mi and Edelweiss and the Unfortunately, by then, John Coltrane had been able to interpret My Favourite Things. Sorry, I just added the un on there because I read it wrong. It's actually fortunately by then. He wouldn't. Actually, he has. Toby Kressel admits that he has included a few tracks here that he doesn't like, but I don't think that this is one of them by any ways nor means. The 34-year-old saxophonist recently left Miles Davis and made his very own impressive statement with the 1959 album Giant Steps. He had assembled his classic quartet, McCoy Tyner on piano, Jimmy Garrison on bass, Elvin Jones on drums. Coltrane's agenda involved the modal style developed with Miles in his own spiritual journey, which included an interest in Asian scales and influences. Coltrane had studied Indian music through his friend Ravi Shankar, and that's part of the mix of My Favourite Things. I knew this was going to be an experience because John had composed Giant Steps and some other great tunes, McCoy Tyner said of joining John Coltrane's quartet. I was aware of it because he did some of the Philadelphia composing in his mother's home, and it was during that period when I really got close to him, and it was an amazing challenge for me. I knew that that's where I belonged, and that was the next step for me. We got on very well. We had a good feeling for each other, similarly conceptually as far as the music was concerned. I knew that that is where I needed to be. I think I was really anxious and wasn't. As fans easily understood it, a piece of a rare beauty with exceptional nuances from Coltrane, Jones, and Tyner that keep this piece timeless. John Coltrane, ladies and gentlemen, and My Favourite Things. I'm not going to do that. I'm afraid that up here at YU Radio, this machine, this terribly temperamental but yet terribly faithful at the same time, this poor machine here is having a very difficult day. I will be back in a couple of minutes. I will see what I can do. Until then, I will leave you with... That right there was Otis Redding and Mr. Pitiful. You're back with 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and see if this machine here is going to be a little more obliging now. This is the time. And I'm afraid it's still acting very suspiciously here. Now, we do have another track. This is the Rolling Stones, and it's only rock and roll. That was the Rolling Stones, and that was their the title track off their album It's Only Rock and Roll from 1974. I think I'm just about going to give up on that John Coltrane track there, I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen. But, however, you are listening to Waiheke Radio, and this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time. And I am Seth Tetley-Jones, your host for this evening. Next track is one John Martin, I'd Rather Be the Devil. Glasgow based Martin went to London at age 17 and was quickly recognised as a prodigy in the London folk scene of the mid-60s. He was originally welcomed as a guitar virtuoso in a town full of highly original stylists. Martin's temperament that kept him a little aside from John Renbourn, Bert Jansch, Richard Thompson and others, but he was widely respected, and on his 1973 album here, Solid Ear, is backed by the Fairport Convention. Martin's technique is derived from the blues but interpreted through jazz and traditional English folk music to have a sound that is entirely his. I'd Rather Be the Devil was written by American blues artist Skip James with an obvious gospel overtone. In Martin's hands, it was completely transformed using the echo effects and his manic, highly stylized picking style. The song is stripped of its American roots and becomes decidedly English. Although the tune has been taken out of the Southern Baptist Church and translated, it's as though the tune has been taken out of the Southern Baptist Church and translated into Presbyterian. What's left is Martin's feverish personality creating great walls of guitar harmonics that rise and clash against one another, and his frantic vocal which struggles against the tune as though wrestling with the devil inside. John Martin and I'd Rather Be the Devil.
No, he'll get lucky tried. I steal a beggar. No, he'll get lucky.
John Martin there with I'd Rather Be the Devil. Now you're listening to Waiheke Radio on 88.3 and 107.4 FM, and this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley Jones. Next up, we've got Pulp and Common People from 1995. Now, Britpop in the mid-90s, when Oasis were tipped to make Over the World, Take Over the World rather, and Blur were to redefine were to redefine Englishness for the new millennium. Pulp came out with a classic British pop tune that was the state of the nation. Essentially, as singer lyricist Jarvis Cocker observes in this track, Britain is now and ever will be a land of small people living small lives. The pop rock band Pulp came out of impoverished provincial city of Sheffield. Oh, well, we'll just go with what Mr. Cresswell says. In the early 90s, early on, it became clear that Cocker had all the makings of Ray Davies when it came to observing his fellow English. It was not a band given to grand statements, but rather acute, witty sketches accompanied by delightful, naive tunes. Common People is ostensibly about young, rich girls wanting to slum it with the proletarian chic. Jarvis certainly makes fun of both sides of the bargain, but there is a dark and angry strain. They always have an escape. This was not a popular view in the gung-ho New Britain. Common People was written about June of 94. The first time we played it became clear to me that it was a significant song. Cocker told Q in 1996, "It seems to be in the air, kind of patronising social voyeurism, slumming it up. The idea that if there's glamour about low-rent, low-life, I felt that kind of Blur's album Part Life, for example, or Oliver Stone's film Natural Born Killers, that there is that noble, savage notion. But if you walk around a council estate, there's plenty of savagery and not much nobility going on. In Sheffield, for if you say someone's common, you're saying they're vulgar, coarse and rough-assed. There's the kind of person who has..." Common People, double meaning. Oh, you're common as muck. And then Emerson, Lake and Palmer's fanfare of the common man. Pulp and Common People.
thinks it's all such a laugh. Yeah, and the chip stays in grease will come out in the bath.
We will never understand how it feels to live your life with no meaning or control and with nowhere left to go. You are amazing.
Pulp and Common People. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And this is 1001 Songs with me, your host, Seth. I wasn't able. I'm just going to put the blame on me there, just to portion blame a bit. I wasn't able to play you John Coltrane before, but I've you can play you a song about John Coltrane. This is the Dream Syndicate and John Coltrane Stereo Blues from 1984. Dream Syndicate had the misfortune to be labelled as the leaders of a movement. The term Paisley Underground loosely grouped the cutting-edge guitar bands together. Their common influence was nothing Paisley, but rather Velvet Underground, the Byrds, and then the early Neil Young. Dream Syndicate leader Steve Wynn acknowledged the influences but added some more, specifically free jazz. John Coltrane's Stereo Blues was a freeform improvisation, intense, sprawling, reckless, hypnotic. Experimental rock and roll that paid off. It's a free-for-all. Said Wynn of the song, but it just isn't an obligatory measure of wildness. It's for a band that knows it well enough to jam on. It's probably my favourite song on the album, but it's got to be right. John Coltrane's appears on the group's second album. They had moved from indie slash to corporate A&M, and a hard rock producer, Sandy Pearlman, Blue Oyster Cult and The Clash, at the helm to make an album that was harder and slicker. Coltrane was a movement when it all came together for them. Went out there playing whatever you call it, psychedelic grunge or indie or underground or noise. We weren't seeing it anywhere, said Wynn. I just don't think that it opened a lot of people's ears to some of the alternatives at the time, to Duran Duran and Haircut 100 and whatever people thought was. Check this out. We were advocates of this music and it started us. And we had something to do with bridging the gap, and that came before the Stooges, the Velvets, the Modern Lovers, the Big Star, and that old cat, and the things that came afterwards, such as Yola Tango and Nirvana, and bands generally like that. And the John Coltrane Stereo Blues. We'll be right back.
dream goes dead. I might have said something sometime. I don't care what I might have said. Yeah, we gonna take it, turn it, set it down. We gonna set it back to where it came. Yeah, yeah. Gonna be alright. Gonna be alright. Be alright. I feel it, yeah, that's it, yeah, yeah. It's gonna be civilized world, baby, it's just you and me. What do I gotta do to show you, mama, the way that it's gonna be? Yeah, we said we'd have it, take my word, we didn't have nothing at all. It's gonna be alright. It's gonna be alright. I feel it, I don't feel it, I feel it, I don't feel it, yeah. It's gonna be up.
Another 9-minute epic that isn't playing too well. I think 4 minutes might be. Sounds, you know, because I think this computer really is having a very hard time tonight. Poor machine. You know, poor, tired machine. I won't feel sorry for it. I can't stand machines. They're really damn annoying me. Anyway, this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. lovely Monday night. Oh, not so debatably lovely Monday night. Up here at Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is Muddy Waters and the Rolling Stones. Of course, I have to play this because whether it works or not, I have to play this. Muddy Waters, McKinley Morganfield learnt the blues. I'm sorry, Muddy Waters, a.k.a. McKinley Morganfield. Didn't know that that was really his name. Learn something every day, don't you? Elton John was Reginald Dwight. Don't know if you knew that, but another little trivia fun fact for you there. Learned the blues when he lived in the Mississippi Delta. The blues is a fluid medium where songs are passed around and evolve very quickly. It was in the Delta that Muddy Waters learnt catfish blues, and from that he created his own song, Rolling Stones. Little did he know that when he wrote the lyric to describe his rambling lifestyle, that his phrase would be taken by a group of one young white Englishmen. In no way could he have imagined that they would become the world's greatest rock and roll. Cresswell thinks that the Rolling Stones are the world's greatest rock and roll band. Fair enough. I'd say, yeah, that's accurate-ish. And all that would make his name immortal all over the world in nations that he had never heard of. Nor could he have imagined that Bob Dylan would use the phrase for one of the greatest songs of the 20th century, which, presumably, seeing as he's going to talk about it like that, is going to come up in can't remember it because I'm thick. None of these things could have existed in anybody's wildest dreams in 1948 when Muddy Waters cut Rolling Stone as the flip side. Person. It's in there somewhere. But anyway, it's a very good track, Robert Johnson's Walking Blues. Muddy had the good fortune to cross paths with Johnson about the time that he was driving tractors in Stovall's plantation for 22 tenths an hour. Muddy rang an illegal jute joint on the plantation and played a little blues himself, although he could neither read nor write. Having made some field recordings for a musicologist, Muddy knew he could sing. When his request for a 3-cent raise was declined, Muddy Waters left the plantation and went to Chicago to make his name in show business. Rolling Stone has driving an electric guitar riff and a tough-as-nails attitude that Chicago blues could not be transplanted. It carried the heft of thousands of years of tradition, but mostly it had the noise and power of electric guitar in the key of E. Coming out of the jukebox joints of the South, or the Chicago South Side, it also had a sleazy propulsion. There could be no mistake that what was on the singer's mind. From this little thing, great wonders grew. From this little thing, great wonders grew. They did, yeah. Those obviously aren't the Oh dear, I'm sorry, this really is awful. I'm not sure what I can do. I'll just leave it. We'll see what we'll see if it improves here at Waiheke Radio. I'm going to see what I can do. In the meantime, I'm going to leave you with a track by the Jukes here. Which is a very, very great shame, because that's one of the most influential songs on rock and roll. Truly one of the 1001 songs. You have to go and look it up, I'm afraid.
Just start talking at the sound of the tone.
I'm afraid that really nothing is playing tonight. I know, it's awful. This is quite a disgrace to the tradition of 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time. And the artists, the stories and the secrets behind them is presented by yours truly. Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. So listen in at 8 PM on Monday evenings, or my repeats on Sundays. I mean Saturdays. I always say Sundays, but it really is not Sundays. It's Saturdays at 2 PM. Until such time, I'm going to leave you with a playlist which probably from a computer, which probably isn't going to work, but never mind. Isn't that just tragic?
Simon and Elle on the Saturday Breakfast Show. Hello, boys.
Good morning, Waiheke. How are you doing?
Hey, Dad! Get the coffees in, eh?